challenge is that, even when you can program judgment to take over from a human, the prediction the machine receives must be fairly precise. When there are too many possible situations, it is too time-consuming to specify what to do in each situation in advance. You can easily program a machine to take a certain action when it is clear what is likely to be true. However, when there is still uncertainty, telling the machine what to do requires a more careful weighing of the costs of mistakes. Uncertainty means you need judgment when the prediction turns out to be wrong, not just when the prediction is right. In other words, uncertainty increases the cost of judging the payoffs for a given decision. Credit card networks have embraced new machine learning techniques for fraud detection. Prediction machines enable them to be more confident in codifying the decision about whether to block a card transaction. As the predictions on fraud become more precise, the likelihood of mislabeling legitimate transactions as fraudulent is reduced. If the credit card companies are not afraid of making a mistake on the prediction, then they can codify the machine's decision, with no need to judge how costly it might be to offend particular customers by declining their transaction. Making the decision is easier. If fraud, then reject. Otherwise, accept the transaction. Reward function engineering. As prediction machines provide better and cheaper predictions, we need to work out how to best use those predictions. Whether or not we can specify judgment in advance, someone needs to determine the judgment. Enter reward function engineering. The job of determining the rewards to various actions, given the predictions that the AI makes. Doing this job well requires an understanding of the organization's needs and the machine's capabilities. Sometimes reward function engineering involves hard coding judgment, programming the rewards in advance of the predictions in order to automate actions. Self-driving vehicles are an example of such hard-coded rewards. Once the prediction is made, the action is instant. But getting the reward right isn't trivial. Reward function engineering has to consider the possibility that the AI will over-optimize on one metric of success, and in doing so, act inconsistently with the organization's broader goals. Entire committees are working on this for self-driving cars. However, such analysis will be required for a variety of new decisions. In other cases, the number of possible predictions may make it too costly for anyone to judge all the possible payoffs in advance. Instead, a human needs to wait for the prediction to arrive and then assess the payoff, which is close to how most decision-making currently works, whether or not it includes machine-generated predictions. As we will see in the following chapter, machines are encroaching on this as well. A prediction machine can, in some circumstances, learn to predict human judgment by observing past decisions. Putting it all together. Most of us already do some reward function engineering, but for humans, not machines. Parents teach their children values. Mentors teach new workers how the system operates. Managers give objectives to their staff and then tweak them to get better performance. Every day we make decisions and judge the rewards. But when we do this for humans, we group prediction and judgment together, and the role of reward function engineering is not distinct. As machines get better at prediction, the role of reward function engineering will become increasingly important. To illustrate reward function engineering in practice, consider pricing decisions at ZipRecruiter, an online job board. Companies pay ZipRecruiter to find qualified candidates for job openings they wish to fill. The core product of ZipRecruiter is a matching algorithm that does this efficiently and at scale, a version of the traditional headhunter that matches job seekers to companies. ZipRecruiter wasn't clear what it should charge companies for its service. Charge too little, and it leaves money on the table. Charge too much, and customers switch to the company's competitors. To figure out its pricing, ZipRecruiter brought in two experts, J.P. Dubey and Sanjog Misra, economists from the University of Chicago's Booth School of Business, who designed experiments to determine the best prices. They randomly assigned different prices to different customer leads and determined the likelihood each group would purchase. This allowed them to determine how different customers responded to different price points. The challenge was to figure out what best meant. Should the company just maximize short-term revenue? To do so, it might choose a high price. But a high price means fewer customers, even though each customer is more profitable. That would also mean less word of mouth. In addition, if it has fewer job postings, the number of people who use ZipRecruiter to find jobs might fall. Finally, the customers facing high prices might start looking for alternatives. While they might pay the high price in the short run, they might switch to a competitor in the long run. How should ZipRecruiter weigh these various considerations? What payoff should it maximize? It was relatively easy to measure the short-run consequences of a price increase. The experts found that increasing prices for some types of new customers would increase profits on a day-to-day basis by over 50%. However, ZipRecruiter didn't act right away. It recognized the longer-term risk and waited to see if the higher-paying customers would leave. After 4 months, it found that the price increase was still highly profitable. It didn't want to forgo the higher profits any longer and judged 4 months to be long enough to implement the price changes. Figuring out the rewards from these various actions, the key piece of judgment, is reward function engineering, a fundamental part of what humans do in the decision-making process. Prediction machines are a tool for humans. So long as humans are needed to weigh outcomes and impose judgment, they have a key role to play as prediction machines improve. Key points. Prediction machines increase the returns to judgment because, by lowering the cost of prediction, they increase the value of understanding the rewards associated with actions. However, judgment is costly. Figuring out the relative payoffs for different actions in different situations takes time, effort, and experimentation. Many decisions occur under conditions of uncertainty. We decide to bring an umbrella because we think it might rain, but we could be wrong. We decide to authorize a transaction because we think it is legitimate, but we could be wrong. Under conditions of uncertainty, we need to determine the payoff for acting on wrong decisions, not just right ones. So, uncertainty increases the cost of judging the payoffs for a given decision. If there are a manageable number of action-situation combinations associated with a decision, then we can transfer the judgment from ourselves to the prediction machine. This is reward function engineering, so that the machine can make the decision itself once it generates the prediction. This enables automating the decision. Often, however, there are too many action-situation combinations, such that it is too costly to code up in advance all the payoffs associated with each combination, especially the very rare ones. In these cases, it is more efficient for a human to apply judgment after the prediction machine predicts. 9. Predicting judgment. Companies like Google's subsidiary Waymo have been successfully testing automated ways of transporting people between two points. But that is only part of creating autonomous vehicles. Driving also has an impact on the passengers in the car, which is much harder to observe. Human drivers, however, do take into account the other people in the car. One of the first things a new driver learns is to brake in a manner that is comfortable for others in the car. Waymo's cars had to be taught to avoid sudden stops and instead smoothly halt. There are thousands of related decisions that are involved in driving. It is impractical for humans to code their judgment about how to handle every possible situation. Instead, we train autonomous driving systems by showing them many examples so that they learn to predict human judgment. What would a human do in this situation? Driving is not unique. In any environment where humans make decisions over and over again, and we are able to collect data about the data they receive and the decisions they make in response, we will likely be able to automate those decisions by rewarding the prediction machine for predicting what would a human do. A fundamental question, at least for humans, is whether AI can turn its predictive powers on human judgment, and in the process, circumvent the need for humans altogether. Hacking the humans. Many decisions are complex and predicated on judgment that is not easily codified. However, this does not guarantee that humans will remain a core part of these decisions. Instead, as with self-driving cars, the machine may learn to predict human judgment by observing many examples. The prediction problem becomes, given the input data, what would a human do? The company Grammarly offers an example. Founded in 2009 by Alex Shevchenko and Max Litvin, Grammarly pioneered the use of machine learning to improve the composition of formal written materials. Its main focus is on improving grammar and spelling in sentences. For instance, put the previous sentence into Grammarly, and it will tell you that its, with an apostrophe, should be its, with no apostrophe. And grammar, spelled G-R-A-M-M-E-R, is misspelled. It should be grammar, G-R-A-M-M-A-R. It will also tell you that the word main, M-A-I-N, is often overused. Grammarly achieved these corrections both by examining a corpus of documents that skilled editors had corrected, and by learning from the feedback of users who accepted or rejected the suggestions. In both cases, Grammarly predicted what a human editor would do. It goes beyond the mechanical application of grammar rules to also assess whether deviations from perfect grammar are preferred by human readers. The idea that humans can train AI extends to a wide variety of situations. The AI at the heart of Lola, a startup automating the process of booking travel, began by finding good hotel options. But, as the New York Times reported, it couldn't match the expertise of, for example, a human agent with years of experience booking family vacations to Disney World. The human can be more nimble, knowing, for instance, to advise a family that hopes to score an unobstructed photo with the children in front of the Cinderella Castle that they should book a breakfast reservation inside the park before the gates open. This example shows that a machine finds it easy to apply judgment where it is describable, for example, availability and price, but not to understand subtler human preferences. However, Lola can learn to predict what humans with a high level of experience and thought would do. The question for Lola is, how many observations of people booking Orlando vacations does the prediction machine need to get enough feedback to learn other relevant criteria? As Lola discovered, while its AI was challenged by some criteria, it was able to uncover decisions human agents had made that those agents were unable to describe in advance, such as preferences for modern hotels or hotels on a street corner. Human trainers help AIs become good enough so that humans gradually become unnecessary for many aspects of a task. This is particularly important when the AI is automating a process with very little tolerance for error. A human may supervise the AI and correct mistakes. Over time, the AI learns from its mistakes until human correction is unnecessary. X.AI, a startup focused on providing an assistant that can arrange meetings and put them into your calendar, is another example. It interacts with the user and people the user wants to meet with through email to a digital personal assistant, Amy or Andrew, depending upon your preference. For instance, you could send an email to Andrew to arrange a meeting between you and Mr. H next Thursday. X.AI then accesses your calendar and sends emails to Mr. H to schedule the meeting. Mr. H may well be none the wiser that Andrew is not human. The point is that you are freed from the task of communicating with Mr. H or his assistant, who ideally would be another Amy or Andrew. Obviously, disaster might strike if scheduling mistakes occur, or if the automated assistant offends a potential invitee. For a number of years, X.AI employed human trainers. They reviewed the AI's responses for accuracy and validated them. Every time a trainer made a change, the AI learned a better response. The role of human trainers was more than just ensuring politeness. They also dealt with bad behavior from humans trying to trip up the assistant. As of this writing, the question is still open as to how much automation this approach of predicting judgment can achieve. Will humans be pushed out? If the machines can learn to predict human behavior, will they push humans out completely? Given the current trajectory of prediction machines, we don't think so. Humans are a resource, so simple economics suggest they will still do something. The question is more whether the something for humans is high or low value, appealing or unappealing. What should the humans in your organization do? What should you look for in new hires? Prediction relies on data. That means humans have two advantages over machines. We know some things that the machines don't, yet, and more importantly, we are better at deciding what to do when there isn't much data. Humans have three types of data that machines don't. First, human senses are powerful. In many ways, human eyes, ears, nose, and skin still surpass machine capabilities. Second, humans are the ultimate arbiters of our own preferences. Consumer data is extremely valuable because it gives prediction machines data about these preferences. Grocery stores provide discounts to consumers who use loyalty cards in order to obtain data on their behavior. Stores pay consumers to reveal their preferences. Google, Facebook, and others provide free services in exchange for data that they can use in other contexts to target advertising. Third, privacy concerns restrict the data available to machines. As long as enough people keep their sexual activity, financial situation, mental health status, and repugnant thoughts to themselves, the prediction machines will have insufficient data to predict many types of behavior. In the absence of good data, our understanding of other humans will provide a role for our judgment skills that machines cannot learn to predict. Prediction with little data. Prediction machines may also lack data because some events are rare. If a machine cannot observe enough human decisions, it cannot predict the judgment underlying those decisions. In Chapter 6, we discussed known unknowns, rare events that are difficult to predict due to lack of data, including presidential elections and earthquakes. In some cases, humans are good at prediction with little data. We can recognize faces, for instance, even as people age. We also discussed how unknown unknowns are, by definition, difficult to predict or respond to. AI cannot predict what a human would do if that human has never faced a similar situation. In this way, AI cannot predict the strategic direction of a company facing a new technology, such as the internet, bioengineering, or even AI itself. Humans are able to make analogies or recognize useful similarities in different contexts. Eventually, prediction machines may get better at analogies. Still, our point that prediction machines will be bad at predicting rare events holds. For the foreseeable future, humans will have a role in prediction and judgment when unusual situations arise. In Chapter 6, we also highlighted unknown knowns. For example, we discussed the challenges of deciding whether to recommend this book to your friend, even if you become fabulously successful at managing AI in the future. The challenge is that you do not have the data on what would have happened had you not read the book. If you want to understand what causes what, you need to observe what would have happened in the counterfactual situation. Humans can provide two main solutions to this problem: experiments and modeling. If the situation arises often enough, you can run a randomized control trial, assign some people to the treatment, force them to read the book, or at least give them the book and maybe hold some consequential exam on it, and others to the control, force them not to read the book, or at least don't advertise it to them. Wait and collect some measure of how they apply AI in their work. Compare the two groups. The difference between the treatment and control groups is the effect of reading the book. Such experiments are very powerful. Without them, new medical treatments are not approved. They fuel many of the decisions at data-driven companies from Google to Capital One. Machines can also conduct experiments. As long as the situation arises enough, the ability to experiment is not unique to humans. The machine can experiment and learn to predict what causes what, just as humans do. This has been a key aspect of how machines can now outperform humans in a variety of video games. Modeling, an alternative to experiments, involves having a deep understanding of the situation and the process that generated the data observed. It is particularly useful when experiments are impossible because the situation doesn't arise often enough or the cost of an experiment is too high. Online job board ZipRecruiter's decision to find the best price, which we described in the previous chapter, involved two parts. First, it needed to figure out what best meant. Short-term revenue or something longer-term? More job seekers and more advertisers or higher prices? Second, it needed to choose a specific price. To solve the second problem, it experimented. Expert humans designed the experiment, but in principle, as AI improves, with enough advertisers and enough time, such experiments could be automated. Determining best, however, is more difficult to automate. Since the number of job seekers depends on the number of job advertisements, and vice versa, the overall market has just one observation. Get it wrong, and ZipRecruiter could go out of business and not get a second chance. So it modeled its business. It explored the consequences of maximizing its short-term profit and compared it to alternative models in which its goal was to maximize profit over a longer time. Without data, modeling outcomes and engineering the reward function remain human abilities, albeit highly skilled ones. Modeling also helped Allied bombing raids during World War II. Engineers recognized that they could better armor their bombers. In particular, they could add some weight to the planes without compromising performance. The question was where exactly to protect the planes. Experimentation was possible, but costly. Pilots would lose their lives. For every bomber that returned from bombing raids over Germany, the engineers could see where they had been hit by anti-aircraft fire. The bullet holes in the planes were their data. But were these the obvious places to better protect the plane? They asked statistician Abraham Wald to assess the problem. After some thought and some rather thorough mathematics, he told them to protect the places without bullet holes. Was he confused? That seemed counterintuitive. Didn't he mean to protect the areas of the plane that did have bullet holes? No. He had a model of the process that generated the data. He recognized that some bombers did not come back from the raids and conjectured that these bombers got hit in places that were fatal. In contrast, the bombers that made it home were hit in places that were not fatal. With this insight, the Air Force engineers increased the armor in the places without bullet holes, and the planes were better protected. Wald's insight about the missing data required an understanding of where the data came from. Given that the problem had not arisen before, the engineers did not have prior examples to draw from. For the foreseeable future, such calculations are beyond the abilities of prediction machines. This problem was hard to solve. The solution came from a human, not a prediction machine. However, the human was one of the best statisticians in history. He had a deep understanding of the mathematics of statistics and a flexible enough mind to understand the process that generated the data. Humans can learn such modeling skills with training. It is a core aspect of most economics PhD programs and part of the MBA curriculum in many schools. including courses we developed at the University of Toronto. Such skills matter when working with prediction machines. Otherwise, it is easy to fall into the trap of unknown knowns. You will think your predictions tell you what to do, but they may lead you astray, mixing cause and effect. Just as Wald had a good model of the process generating the data about bullet holes, a good model of human behavior can help make better predictions when human decisions generate the data. For the foreseeable future, humans need to help develop such models and identify the relevant predictors of behavior. A prediction machine will struggle to extrapolate in a situation in which it has no data because behavior is likely to change. It needs to understand humans. Similar issues arise in many decisions that involve the question, what will happen if I do this, when you have never done it before? Should you add a new product to a product line? Should you merge with a competitor? Should you acquire an innovative startup or a channel partner? If people will behave differently after the change, then past behavior is not a useful guide for future behavior. The prediction machine will not have relevant data. For rare events, prediction machines have limited use. Rare events, therefore, provide an important limit to the ability of machines to predict human judgment. Key points. Machines may learn to predict human judgment. An example is driving. It is impractical for humans to code their judgment about how to handle every possible situation. However, we train autonomous driving systems by showing them many examples and rewarding them for predicting human judgment. What would a human do in this situation? There are limits to the ability of machines to predict human judgment. The limits relate to lack of data. There is some data that humans have that machines do not, such as individual preferences. Such data has value, and companies currently pay to access it through discounts on using loyalty cards and free online services like Google and Facebook. Machines are bad at prediction for rare events. Managers make decisions on mergers, innovation, and partnerships without data on similar past events for their firms. Humans use analogies and models to make decisions in such unusual situations. Machines cannot predict judgment when a situation has not occurred many times in the past. 10. Taming complexity. The TV show The Americans, a Cold War drama set in Washington, D.C. in the 1980s, features a robot that delivers mail and classified documents around the FBI office. That an autonomous vehicle existed in the 1980s might seem surprising. Marketed as the Mailmobile, it had first appeared a decade earlier. To guide the Mailmobile, a technician would lay out a chemical trail that gave off ultraviolet light from the mailroom along the carpeted floors to various offices. The robot used a sensor to slowly follow the trail, at less than 1 mile per hour, until the chemical markings signaled it to stop. The Mailmobile cost between $10,000 and $12,000, about $50,000 in today's dollars, and for an extra fee, the company could attach a sensor to detect obstacles in its path. Otherwise, it just beeped a lot to warn people it was coming. In an office where a human took 2 hours to deliver the mail, the Mailmobile completed the job in 20 minutes, not stopping for office banter. The mail robot required careful planning. Even some simple but perhaps costly office reallocations might have been necessary to accommodate the robot's operation. It could deal with only small variations in its environment. Even today, many automated rail systems worldwide have extensive installation requirements. For example, the Copenhagen Metro uses no drivers, but it works because trains operate in a carefully pre-planned setting. Only a limited number of sensors inform the robot about its environment. These limitations are a common feature of most machines and equipment. They are designed to operate in rigid environments. Compared with most equipment on factory floors, the mail robot was notable because many offices could install it relatively easily. But for the most part, robots need a tightly controlled and standardized environment in which to operate, because the equipment does not tolerate uncertainty. More ifs. All machines, both hard and soft, are essentially programmed using the classic if-then logic. The if part specifies a scenario, environmental condition, or piece of information. The then part tells the machine what to do for each of the ifs, and if nots, and elses. If the chemical trail is no longer detected, then stop. The male robot had no ability to see its surroundings, and could only operate in an environment that artificially reduced the ifs it could deal with. If it could distinguish between more situations, more ifs, and even if it didn't change what it did, essentially stop or go at any point, it could have been used in many more places. A modern-day Roomba, the automated vacuum-cleaning robot from iRobot, is able to do this and roam freely around rooms with sensors to prevent it from falling down stairs or getting stuck in corners, along with a memory to ensure it covers the floor in a timely fashion. If a robot operates outside, it needs to move more slowly to avoid slipping when the ground is wet. Two possible situations, or states, arise: dry and wet. If the robot's motion is also influenced by whether it is light or dark, whether a human is moving in the vicinity or not, whether rush items are in that batch of mail, if it is okay to run over squirrels but not cats, and a variety of other factors, and if the rules are sensitive to interactions, it is okay to run over squirrels if it is dark, but not if it is light, then the number of situations, the number of ifs, grows radically. Better prediction identifies more ifs. With more ifs, a male robot can react to more situations. A prediction machine enables the robot to identify that wet, dark environments with a human running 20 feet behind and a cat up ahead might require slowing down. But wet, dark environments with a human standing 20 feet behind and a squirrel ahead might not. The prediction machine enables the robot to move around without a pre-planned trail or track. Our new mailmobile can operate in more environments without much additional cost. Delivery robots abound. Warehouses have autonomous delivery systems that can predict their environment and adjust accordingly. Fleets of Kiva robots transport products inside Amazon's vast fulfillment centers. Startups are experimenting with delivery robots that take packages, or pizza, onto sidewalks and streets from businesses to homes and back again. Robots can now do this because they can now use data from sophisticated sensors to predict their environment and then receive instructions for how to handle it. We don't often conceptualize this as prediction, but fundamentally it is. And as it keeps getting cheaper, the robots will get better and better. More thens. George Stigler, a Nobel Prize-winning economist, reportedly remarked, "People who have never missed a flight have spent too long in airports." While a peculiar logic is in operation here, the counterargument is strong. You can get work done or relax just as easily at the airport as elsewhere, and it might give you some peace of mind to get there early to avoid the hassles of missing a flight. Thus was born the airport lounge. Airlines invented it to provide passengers, or at least wealthy or frequent flying ones, a convenient and quiet space to wait for their flights. The lounge exists because you are likely to arrive early for your flight. Someone who is perennially late would only use a lounge in transit or when a flight is delayed, or to weep when they miss their flight to Bali. The lounge is there to provide some wiggle room, a bit of a buffer, for when your arrival time is less than precise, which is likely to be quite often. Suppose you have a flight at 10 a.m. Airline guidelines say you should arrive 60 minutes beforehand. You could arrive at 9 a.m. and make your flight. Given that, what time should you leave for the airport? You usually can get to the airport in 30 minutes, which might allow you to leave at 8:30 a.m. But that does not account for traffic disruption. When flying back to Toronto from a New York meeting about this very book, we three experienced such bad traffic to LaGuardia Airport that we ended up walking the last mile along the freeway. That could easily add another 30 minutes. More, if you are risk-averse. Now you are back to 8 a.m., which is when you leave every time you don't know what traffic is going to be like. As a result, you usually end up spending 30 minutes or more in the lounge. Apps such as Waze provide very accurate travel times from your current location to the airport. Such apps monitor both real-time and historic traffic patterns to both forecast and update the quickest routes. Pair that with Google Now, and you can account for any delays that might appear for your flights with other apps that monitor historical delays or the location of a connecting aircraft. Together, these apps mean that you can reliably trust the prediction, which opens up new options, such as, unless there is a traffic problem, leave later and go directly to the gate. Or, if there is flight delay, leave later. Better prediction, by reducing or eliminating a key source of uncertainty, eliminates your need to have a place to wait at the airport. More critically, better prediction enables new actions. Rather than having a hard-wired rule to leave 2 hours before your flight, you can have a contingent rule that takes information and then tells you when to leave. Those contingent rules are if-then statements and enable more thens. Leave early, on time, or later, depending on more reliable predictions. So, in addition to producing more ifs, prediction expands opportunities by increasing the number of feasible thens. Mail robots and airport lounges have something in common. They are both imperfect solutions to uncertainty, and they both will be undermined by better prediction. More ifs and thens. Better prediction allows you to predict more things more often, reducing uncertainty. Each new prediction also has an indirect effect. It makes choices feasible that you would not have considered before. And you don't have to explicitly code the ifs and thens. You can train the prediction machines with examples. Voila! Problems that were not previously understood as prediction problems may now be tackled as such. We were compromising without recognizing it. Such compromises are a key aspect of how humans make decisions. Economics Nobel Prize winner Herbert Simon called this satisficing. While classical economics models superintelligent beings making perfectly rational decisions, Simon recognized and emphasized in his work that humans cannot cope with complexity. Instead, they satisfice, doing the best they can to meet their objectives. Thinking is difficult, so people take shortcuts. Simon was a polymath. In addition to a Nobel, he also won the Turing Award, often called the Nobel of Computing, for contributions to artificial intelligence. His economics and computing contributions were related. Echoing his thoughts on humans, his 1976 Turing Award lecture emphasized that computers have limited processing resources. In a finite number of steps over a finite interval of time, they can execute only a finite number of processes. He recognized that computers, like humans, satisfice. The mail robots and airport lounge are examples of satisficing in the absence of good prediction. Such examples are everywhere. It will take practice and time to imagine the possibilities enabled by better prediction. It is not intuitive for most people to think of airport lounges as a solution to poor prediction, and that they will be less valuable in an era of powerful prediction machines. We are so used to satisficing that we don't even think of some decisions as involving a prediction. In the translation example earlier in the book, specialists saw automatic language translation not as a prediction problem, but as a linguistic one. The traditional linguistic approach used a dictionary to translate word by word, coupled with some grammatical rules. This was satisficing. It led to poor results because of too many ifs. Translation became a prediction problem when researchers recognized that translation could happen sentence by sentence or even paragraph by paragraph. Translation with prediction machines involves predicting the likely equivalent sentence in the other language. Statistics enable the computer to choose the best translation by predicting the ifs, which sentence a professional translator is most likely to use based on translation matching in the data. It relies on, remarkably, no linguistic rules. A pioneer of this field, Frederick Jelinek, remarked, "Every time I fire a linguist, the performance of the speech recognizer goes up." Clearly, this is a scary development for linguists and translators. All sorts of other tasks, including image recognition, shopping, and conversation, are being identified as complex prediction problems that are amenable to the application of machine learning. By enabling more complex decisions, better prediction can lower risk. For instance, one of the practical applications of recent AI is in radiology. Much of what radiologists currently do involves taking images and then identifying issues of concern. They predict abnormalities in images. AIs are increasingly able to perform that prediction function at human levels of accuracy or better, which can assist radiologists and other medical specialists in making decisions that have an impact on patients. The critical performance metric is the accuracy of the diagnosis. Whether the machine predicts a disease when the patient is ill and predicts no disease when the patient is healthy. But we must consider what such decisions involve. Suppose doctors suspect a lump and must decide how to determine if it is cancerous. One option is medical imaging. Another option is something more invasive, like a biopsy. A biopsy has the advantage of being highly likely to provide an accurate diagnosis. The problem, of course, is that a biopsy is invasive. Thus, both doctors and patients prefer to avoid it if the likelihood is low that the issue is serious. One job of a radiologist is to provide a reason not to conduct an invasive procedure. The ideal is to perform a procedure only to confirm a serious diagnosis. The biopsy offers insurance against the risk of not treating a deadly disease, but it comes at a cost. The decision to undertake the biopsy depends on how costly and invasive the biopsy itself is and how bad it would be to overlook the disease. Doctors use these factors to decide whether the biopsy is worth the physical and monetary costs of the invasive procedure. With a reliable diagnosis from an image, patients can forgo the invasive biopsy. They can take an action that, absent the prediction, would be too risky. They no longer have to compromise. Advances in AI mean less need for satisficing and more ifs and more thens. More complexity with less risk. This transforms decision-making by expanding options. Key points. Enhanced prediction enables decision-makers, whether human or machine, to handle more ifs and more thens. That leads to better outcomes. For example, in the case of navigation, illustrated in this chapter with the mail robot, prediction machines liberate autonomous vehicles from their previous limitation of operating only in controlled environments. These settings are characterized by their limited number of ifs, or states. Prediction machines allow autonomous vehicles to operate in uncontrolled environments, like on a city street, because rather than having to code all the potential ifs in advance, the machine can instead learn to predict what a human controller would do in any particular situation. Similarly, the example of airport lounges illustrates how enhanced prediction facilitates more thens. For example, then leave at time X, or Y, or Z, depending on the prediction of how long it will take to get to the airport at a particular time on a particular day, rather than always leaving early just in case, and then spending extra time waiting in the airport lounge. In the absence of good prediction, we do a lot of satisficing, making decisions that are good enough, given the information available. Always leaving early for the airport, and often waiting once you arrive because you're early is an example of satisficing. That solution is not optimal, but it's good enough given the information available. The mail robot and the airport lounge are both inventions designed in response to satisficing. Prediction machines will reduce the need to satisfice, and thus reduce the returns to investing in solutions like mail robot systems and airport lounges. We are so used to satisficing in our businesses and in our social lives that it will take practice to imagine the vast array of transformations possible as a result of prediction machines that can handle more ifs and thens and thus more complex decisions in more complex environments. It's not intuitive for most people to think of airport lounges as a solution to poor prediction, and that they will be less valuable in an era of powerful prediction machines. Another example is the use of biopsies, which largely exist in response to weaknesses in prediction from medical images. As the confidence in prediction machines go up, the impact from medical imaging AIs may be much greater on the jobs associated with conducting biopsies because, like airport lounges, this costly and invasive procedure was invented in response to poor prediction. Airport lounges and biopsies are both risk management solutions. Prediction machines will provide new and better methods for managing risk. 11. Fully automated decision-making. On December 12, 2016, Tesla Motors Club member J.M. Davis posted to a forum on electric vehicles, reporting on an experience he had had in his Tesla. While driving to work on a Florida freeway at about 60 miles per hour, his Tesla dashboard indicated a car ahead that he could not see because the truck immediately in front of him blocked his view. Suddenly, his emergency brakes kicked in, even though the truck ahead had not slowed. A second later, the truck veered into a shoulder to avoid hitting the car in front that had in fact stopped quickly because of debris on the road. The Tesla had decided to brake before the truck in front had done so, allowing J.M. Davis's car to stop with plenty of room. He wrote, "If I was driving manually, it is unlikely that I would have been able to stop in time, since I could not see the car that had stopped. The car reacted well before the car ahead of me reacted, and that made the difference between a crash and a hard stop. Strong work, Tesla. Thanks for saving me." Tesla had just sent a software update to its vehicles that allowed its autopilot self-driving feature to exploit radar information to gain a clearer picture of the environment in front of the car. While Tesla's feature worked when its cars were in self-driving mode, it is easy to imagine a situation where a car takes over control from a human in the event of an imminent accident. Car makers in the United States have reached an agreement with the Department of Transportation to make automatic emergency braking standard on vehicles by 2022. Often, the distinction between AI and automation is muddy. Automation arises when a machine undertakes an entire task, not just prediction. As of this writing, a human still needs to periodically intervene in driving. When should we expect full automation? AI in its current incarnation involves a machine performing one element, prediction. Each of the other elements represents a complement to prediction, something that becomes more valuable as prediction gets cheaper. Whether full automation makes sense depends on the relative returns to machines also doing the other elements. Humans and machines can accumulate data, whether for input, training, or feedback, depending on the data type. A human must ultimately make a judgment, but the human can codify judgment and program it into a machine in advance of a prediction. Or a machine can learn to predict human judgment through feedback. This brings us to the action. When is it better for machines rather than humans to undertake actions? More subtly, when does the fact that a machine is handling the prediction increase the returns to the machine rather than a human also undertaking the action? We must determine the returns to machines performing the other elements, data collection, judgment, actions, to decide whether a task should be or will be fully automated. Sunglasses at night. Australia's remote Pilbara region has large quantities of iron ore. Most mining sites are more than 1,000 miles from the nearest major city, Perth. All employees at the site are flown in for intensive shifts, lasting weeks. They accordingly command a premium in terms of wages and in the costs of supporting them while on site. It's not surprising that the mining companies want to make the most of them while they are there. The large iron ore mines of mining giant Rio Tinto are highly capital intensive, not just in cost, but also in sheer size. They take iron ore from the top of the ground in enormous pits a meteor impact would be challenged to replicate. Thus, the main job is hauling using trucks the size of 2-story houses, not just up from the pit, but to nearby rail lines built to transport the ore thousands of miles north to waiting ports. The real cost to mining companies is therefore not people, but downtime. Mining companies have, of course, tried to optimize by running throughout the night. However, even the most time-shifted humans are not as productive at night. Initially, Rio Tinto solved some of its human deployment issues by employing trucks that it could control remotely from Perth. But in 2016, it went a step further, with 73 self-driving trucks that could operate autonomously. This automation has already saved Rio Tinto 15% in operating costs. The mine runs its trucks 24 hours a day, with no bathroom breaks and no air conditioning for the cabs, as the temperatures soar above 50 degrees Celsius during the day. Finally, without drivers, the trucks do not need a front and back, meaning they do not need to turn around, further saving in terms of safety, space, maintenance, and speed. AI made this possible by predicting hazards in the truck's way and coordinating their passage into the pits. No human driver needs to watch over the truck's safety on site, or even remotely, and there are fewer humans around to create safety risks. Going even further, miners in Canada are exploring bringing in AI-driven robots to dig underground, while Australian miners are looking to automate the entire chain from ground to port, including diggers, bulldozers, and trains. Mining is the perfect opportunity for full automation precisely because it has already removed humans from so many activities. These days, humans perform directed but key functions. Before the recent advances in AI, everything except prediction could already be automated. Prediction machines represent the last step in removing humans from many of the tasks involved. Previously, a human scanned the surrounding environment and told the equipment precisely what to do. Now, AI that takes information from sensors learns how to predict obstacles for clear paths. Because a prediction machine can forecast whether the path is clear, mining companies no longer need humans to do so. If the final human element in a task is prediction, then once a prediction machine can do as well as a human, a decision maker can remove the human from the operation. However, as we will see in this chapter, few tasks are as clear-cut as the mining case. For most automation decisions, the provision of machine prediction does not necessarily mean that it becomes worthwhile to remove human judgment and substitute a machine decision maker, nor remove human action and substitute a physical robot. No time or need to think. Prediction machines made self-driving cars like Tesla's possible. But using prediction machines to trigger an automatic subversion of humans for machine control of a vehicle is another matter. The rationale is easy to understand. Between the moment an accident is predicted and the required reaction, a human has no time for thought or action. No time to think. By contrast, it is relatively easy to program the vehicle's response. When speed is needed, the benefit of ceding control to the machine is high. When you employ a prediction machine, the prediction made must be communicated to the decision maker. But if the prediction leads directly to an obvious course of action, no need to think, then the case for leaving human judgment in the loop is diminished. If a machine can be coded for judgment and handle the consequent action relatively easily, then it makes sense to leave the entire task in the machine's hands. This has led to all manner of innovations. At the 2016 Rio Olympics, a new robotic camera videotaped swimmers underwater by tracking the action and moving to get the right shot from the bottom of the pool. Previously, operators remotely controlled cameras, but had to forecast the location of the swimmer. Now, a prediction machine could do it. Swimming was just the beginning. Researchers are now working to bring such camera automation to more complex sports, like basketball. Once again, a need for speed and codifiable judgment is driving the move to full automation. What do accident prevention and automated sports cameras have in common? In each, there are high returns for quick action responses to predictions, and judgment is either codifiable or predictable. Automation occurs when the return to machines handling all functions is greater than the returns to including humans in the process. Automation can also arise when the costs of communication are high. Take space exploration. It is much easier to send robots into space than humans. Several companies are now exploring ways to mine valuable minerals from the moon, but they need to overcome many technical challenges. The one that concerns us here is how moon-based robots will navigate and act. It takes at least 2 seconds for a radio signal to get to the moon and back. So an Earth-based human operating a moon-based robot is a slow and painful process. Such a robot cannot react quickly to new situations. If a robot moving along the surface of the moon suddenly encounters a cliff, any communication delay means that Earth-based instructions may arrive too late. Prediction machines provide a solution. With good prediction, the moon-based robot's actions can be automated, with no need for an Earth-based human to guide every step. Without AI, such commercial ventures would likely be impossible. When the law requires a human to act. The notion that full automation may lead to harm has been a common theme in science fiction. Even if we're all comfortable with complete machine autonomy, the law might not allow it. Isaac Asimov anticipated the regulatory issue by opting for hard-coding robots with 3 laws, cleverly designed to remove the possibility that robots harm any human. Similarly, modern philosophers often pose ethical dilemmas that seem abstract. Consider the trolley problem. Imagine yourself standing at a switch that allows you to shift a trolley from one track to another. You notice 5 people in the trolley's path. You could switch it to another track, but along that path is 1 person. You have no other options and no time to think. What do you do? That question confounds many people, and often they just want to avoid thinking about the conundrum altogether. With self-driving cars, however, that situation is likely to arise. Someone will have to resolve the dilemma and program the appropriate response into the car. The problem cannot be avoided. Someone, most likely the law, will determine who lives and who dies. At the moment, rather than code our ethical choices into autonomous machines, we've chosen to keep a human in the loop. For instance, imagine a drone weapon that could operate completely autonomously, identifying, targeting, and killing enemies by itself. Even if an army general could find a prediction machine that could distinguish civilians from combatants, how long would it take combatants to figure out how to confuse the prediction machine? The required level of precision may not be available anytime soon. So, in 2012, the U.S. Department of Defense put forward a directive that many interpreted as a requirement to keep a human in the loop on the decision whether to attack or not. While it is unclear if the requirement must always be followed, the need for human intervention, for whatever reason, will limit the autonomy of prediction machines even when they might operate on their own. Even Tesla's autopilot software, despite being able to drive a car, comes with legal terms and conditions that drivers keep their hands on the wheel at all times. From an economist's point of view, whether this makes sense depends on the context of potential harm. For instance, operating an autonomous vehicle in a remote mine or on a factory floor is quite different from operating on public roads. What distinguishes the within-factory environment from the open road is the possibility of what economists call externalities, costs that are felt by others, rather than the key decision-makers. Economists have various solutions for the problem of externalities.